The Share Pickers Podcast with Justin Waite. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to Macro, Micro and Small Cap News for Friday, the 30th of January 2026. The last trading day of January 2026. Almost said 2025 then. Time flies, isn't it? We've already done the first month. Done. Over with. It's been a volatile month, isn't it? I don't know what's going on in the markets at the moment. It was like Microsoft selling off in America. And that's a bit of trouble. Bitcoin selling off and all that stuff. But we'll get into the markets in a bit. I just want to say this is a Friday podcast. So, you know, I've done a couple of podcasts this week, but interviews with Xerox CEO, Time Finance CEO and CFO. I hold a bit of stock in both. And I'm thinking I'm going to be doing it. There's been a lot of releases. And like I say, when there's a lot of releases, I spend a lot of time inputting data onto the website, sharepickers.com. And so at the end of the day, then I don't feel like doing a podcast because my eyes are burning and I haven't got the energy. So what I'm going to do is normally Friday still, in fact, this week, Wednesday and Thursday were quite busy, which hasn't happened previously last, you know, 5-6 months. But Friday is still quite quiet, so I'm going to maybe round up the week's news, looking at some of the news from companies that are a bit more interesting on a Friday. Just do a big roundup. By the way, I do feel YouTube's doing well still, isn't it? I still, my default, I'm not on TikTok or any of that stuff. I'm on Instagram. But my default sometimes when I'm researching stuff or looking for stuff or want to find out stuff is YouTube. And the last 2 weeks, I was at the last week probably, I've become a bit obsessed with Greg Jackson. You know, Greg, not one of the Jackson brothers. No, it's not. it's not Michael, Randy, Tito, Jermaine, and Greg. No, Greg Jackson, he's the founder and CEO of Octopus Energy. Very smart guy. I mean, did he go to Cambridge or something? I think Oxford, one of the two. But he founded, I didn't realize this, he founded Octopus Energy in 2016. That's all. 2016, 10 years has been going. It now serves 12.9 million accounts, 7.3 million households in 27 countries, and is worth 9 billion. That is phenomenal, isn't it? Because you've always had these, you know, a few big players in the energy market, and all of a sudden, Octopus has seemed to come from nowhere. Why? They're doing things better. And we're with Octopus, and there's so many different tariffs you can get that are quite sharp, quite smart. And I urge you to just go and watch, if you've not watched some of Greg's videos, he is about revolutionising, you know, the energy market via technology. And it's very interesting. And there's a lot of people argue, you know, about whether green energy is economically viable. And do you know what it is? It absolutely is. And as Greg mentions, you can't argue with physics. And you can't. And I'll sort of explain what he said and what I completely believe in is essentially oil and gas exploration is a mature industry. Okay? And I didn't realise this. And he's not, obviously, people would say, oh, that's in his interest to say that. But he does say the incumbents are trying to muddy the waters all the time. But if you think about it, it makes sense, right? Oil and gas is a mature industry. It's never going to get a lot cheaper because the technologies have reached an end point in development. There's not a lot more they can do with it, you know? There's also a finite amount of reserves out there. And of course, the supply goes down. And if even if demand stays the same, which there any sort of is, you know, the prices will go up. So it's a finite reserve, okay? Whereas if you look at green energy, for example, the sun and the wind are not finite. They're infinite, essentially, aren't they? Well, put it this way, because, of course, the sun may blow up. But let's be honest, it'll probably last a lot longer than oil and gas. Plus, the technologies used to harvest this energy is getting cheaper all the time. And I sort of was aware of this. I didn't realise how much they'd come down. For example, solar panels have dropped by 90%. 90 over the last 10 years, transforming it from one of the most expensive electricity sources to among the cheapest. And people say, yeah, but you know, wind doesn't always shine, you know, or the sun doesn't always shine, wind doesn't always blow. That would be odd, wouldn't it, if wind always shined? Yeah, so people, that's true. The wind doesn't always blow, the sun doesn't always shine. But you can store the energy when the wind is blowing and the sun is shining. And the price of battery storage is also coming down very quickly. China are championing this. But battery storage has dropped by roughly 90% as well over the last 10 to 15 years. So just to put in context, battery prices hit a record low of $108 a kilowatt hour in late 2025. Prices are projected to fall by 10 to 20% in 2026. Predictions are for a further 40% by 2030. And so if you have solar, in fact, we're getting solar and battery. For homeowners, that means if you buy electricity from the grid, even when the sun isn't shining, okay? If you buy electricity from the grid off-peak, 2 a.m. to, say, 5 a.m., it's 15 pence per kilowatt hour. 15 pence, 1.5. And then peak times, if you've got excess energy in your battery, you sell it back to them for 25 pence. Just making 10 pence profit for kilowatt hour. And I didn't realise this. I saw Greg mention this on a Question Time about a year back. He said there's so many cars out there with battery storage that basically you can sell to the grid. And I didn't realise you could do this with an EV. If you have an EV and you're with, say, Octopus, and so, you know, for example, you charge the car overnight, say from 2 till 5, you can get it 7 pence a kilowatt hour. Drive around during the day, then if you have any excess energy left in the battery of that car, you can sell it back into the grid at 29 pence. So from 7 pence you're buying it, 29 pence you're selling it. That's genius, isn't it? So the more people who have solar batteries, electric cars, the more likely is it the prices come down for everyone for electric. And because off-peak is cheaper because there's excess supply. There's not a lot of demand, there's more produced than being used. And peak time, of course, conversely, is expensive because there's excess demand. Now, if all people sold to the grid at peak time, it would boost supply and bring down prices. So the more people who buy solar and batteries and EVs, the cheaper they become. And of course, then you've got, you know, technology, the storage is getting better, storage density in batteries is getting better. So not only they're cheaper, but they store more. And that doesn't happen with oil and gas. So you can see the way forward there. In the end, everyone will be their own little power stations storing electricity, sending it back to the grid. It'll flatten out those peaks and troughs of the peak demand supply issue. I think that's genius, you know? I'm quite excited about that. And I've got to say, oil and gas doesn't get me that excited. But I think the development of technology like this is amazing. Anyway. Okay, on to stocks and shares. So that's my, just look at Greg Jackson, looking him up. You'll see a couple of speeches by him, and he comes across as a really nice, down-to-earth, honest guy, and but obviously a very smart cookie. On the webinar this week, I talked about, I ordered my portfolio into what I thought was risk-reward order. So say you've got, you know, 20 stocks or whatever. You think, okay, what's the highest risk here, and what's the lowest risk? And of course, that sort of correlates with the reward as well, lowest risk reward. And I was talking about it as having, you know, a range of exposures to companies with different risk-reward profiles and amending your exposure in relation to this risk and reward. So if a company has a lower risk reward, you can have bigger exposure. And I give the example of a fund, for example. I said, in my portfolio, the lowest risk reward is a fund. And what that means is, yes, you get lower reward, but there's pretty much a more guaranteed return. So if you're aiming for 5, 10% in a fund, you'll pretty much get that. Okay, there'll be odd years where it'll dip. But over time, you're pretty much guaranteed, you know, that kind of return. So it's low reward pretty much, but also low risk, you know? And that should be the sort of backbone of your portfolio, because if everything else goes wrong, your individual investments, you've still got that, you know, fund that'll pay off over the long term. But of course, if you want to achieve a bit more reward than that, then you have to go, you know, up the risk curve a little bit. And as you can imagine, a fund, you know, holding, say, 50, 100,000 or 2,000, or even some funds hold tens of thousands of stocks, it's not high risk. Because, you know, if you get one company that blows up or 10 companies that blow up in their earnings or whatever, and they drop by 20, 30%, it doesn't affect the fund pretty much because there's so many stocks in there anyway. Now, individual companies, of course, if you hold one company and it comes up with a profit warning, that's what's happened to me today, actually, then it'll take a big hit or a bigger hit. That's why your exposure needs to be amended. So if you, you know, if a company has a higher risk reward, and I got to say, a lot of private investors want to go towards this, or they do tend to go towards higher risk reward stocks. That's a generalization. I'm talking about the people I see pumping stocks on X. They're generally in very high risk rewards. They want to get rich quickly. And essentially, that's quite hard. And you end up, sort of, you can blow up your account if you overexpose. But if a company has a higher risk reward, you should not overexpose for two reasons. The risk of achieving the bigger reward is higher. But if the reward plays out, you don't need exposure, bigger exposure, to make a difference. So, for example, let's say you've got a portfolio of 100 grand as a round figure. Some of you won't, obviously, some more than that, some have less than that. But as a round figure, good for percentages, 100 grand portfolio. So let's say you've got 10% of your entire portfolio in a lower risk reward stock or fund. That's 10 grand, okay? And it returns 10% a year. That equals £1,000 return. Now, a higher risk reward, you're thinking, oh, let's go big on that, let's go crazy. But remember, it's higher reward and higher risk too. So the risk of achieving that reward is higher. A lot more volatile. You may get scared out. So let's say you go for 1% as opposed to 10% exposure. And if it returns 100%, that equals £1,000. For your portfolio, it's the same kind of return. But high risk means high reward as well. I think people mistake this. It's worth, you know, paying attention to that. And of course, if you are in a high risk stock that starts playing out well, successfully, then you can up your exposure. And there's plenty of time. But I think, you know, one of the mistakes I've made several times is going too big too quickly. In fact, today, the top three companies on my portfolio said it was the highest risk reward. One of them was Transense Technologies. I liked technologies, but today they came out with a profit warning. In fact, you know, oddly, yesterday I reduced. I don't know why I reduced. I just looked at I saw some price weakness yesterday, and I went over their previous results and their forecasts, and I thought, that's a bit ambitious, I think. And so I just trimmed a little bit. I didn't trim enough, obviously. But my exposure to that company was literally 2% of my portfolio. So it dropped by, I think I sold, it dropped by about 30% a day. But 2% of, you know, 30% of 2% is nothing. It doesn't affect my portfolio value, pretty much. Hardly ever. And so why do I have a position that size? Because I believe it's got very good potential, very good technology, and over time, I think it'll do very well. But I don't want to go too big too early. So I just want to have a sort of foothold, a placeholder holding it. So I'll keep researching it, keep looking at it, and then up my exposure to it if it goes well. But like I said, they came out with a profit warning I didn't like, and I thought that's going to take, you know, generally when you have a company that does a profit warning like that, it takes months to correct. So I thought, I'm out, I'll take the hit. And it's a hit financially, not a big hit financially, because I wasn't, you know, overexposed, had a small position in them. But it's always an emotional hit, you know? I feel like I got it wrong somewhere. And I don't think I got it wrong on their technology. I just think they've talked about delays and all that stuff. So it's like, operationally, it's not going smooth. And that's the thing with high-risk stocks, you know? That's why they're high-risk. They have these bumps in the road. Now, I can choose to hold on with them. No, I'm not. I'll wait until they do better in the future, and I'll keep an eye on them, and I'll maybe, you know, invest again. But not now. I prefer to have the cash and maybe redeploy that elsewhere in a lower risk or a more, you know, probable return. So, so I hope that helps in some way. Just the problems I've had always is going too big, on risk stocks that are too risky, trying to be too greedy, trying to make money too quickly. And that's the issue, you know. And you can see when a company's doing well and when a company is, you know, there's price weakness. Sometimes you get price weakness before an update. And in fact, Ashtead Technologies recently was at that. You know, a lot of price weakness, and it was the UK's most shorted stock. That was. And now they come out with a trading update. Stock price jumped, and the shorts have reduced from, like, I think they were 8.6% short the stock to now down about 5%. So the shorts are coming off. Hey, the shorts are coming off. Okay. Anyway, let's have a look at the markets. I tell you what's taking a turn today is, well, sooner or later it was going to happen. And that was gold and silver. Okay. Let's have a look at the markets first of all, though. The FTSE 100, it's up today, actually. Even though it's a minus, the banks are doing well, apparently, today. So it's up 0.5%, 10,222. So this is, where's the all-time high? The all-time high was 2,238. It's not far off that, what, 16 points off that? Stock 600, up 0.7%, 611. Of course, just off the recent high. S&P 500 yesterday, in fact, it did drop. There had a very spike down yesterday. And this is sometimes a little bit worrying. It spiked down. So the S&P only finished down 0.13%, okay, at 6969. But it went down to 6870. So it was down at one point, a lot more than that. And I think the NASDAQ was down over 2%, but it ended up down 0.7%. So there's a bit of weakness amongst tech stocks in America. The worrying thing is there's so much tied up in these big, you know, companies in America. If they start selling off, it's going to affect the whole indices. And of course, then you get the entire market jitters. But it does need this. Like I said, going back, if you look at the, you know, the returns of the S&P 500, whenever the forecast P has been above 23, the following few years means you haven't achieved as good a returns or below average returns. And so that means either it goes sideways or it has a drop and then rebuild. And, you know, and markets tend not to go sideways for a long period of time. So I think, you know, a sell-off is probably due. I don't know when. You know, markets can keep rallying for a long time, but it's probably needs to pull back a little bit to get back to a norm, to revert to, revert to mean, basically. Okay, small cap. Well, that's an all-time high. The FTSE small cap, all-time high. Is it all-time high? Yes, it is now. All-time high, FTSE small cap, up 0.4%, 7836. Russell 2000 yesterday, that was up a little bit. It did dip again, big wick on the candle, dipped down, bounced back up. But it was up 0.05% yesterday, 2654. The FTSE 250 today, it's up a fifth of 1%, 23,310. So not far off its all-time high, which is 3 days ago. Nasdaq was there. Dow Jones was up 0.11% last week. Let's have a look at something here. The FTSE All Share Index is up. Is that all time high? It's very close. 5512 is all time high. We're at 5511, so not far off that. The FTSE All World Index, again, just a couple of little, tiny little three down days, but it's not far off the all time high. It's down 0.018% to 691. The AIM All Share. This is one of the best performing indices this year. Well, out of all of America and the US and Europe, it is the best performing indices, about 8%. But it's down a day, 0.8%, 818. So some commodities here. Brent crude down 0.4%, $70 though. It's shot up in the last few sessions. I think there's worry about Iran, isn't it? Oil is due a correction. I mean, a re-rate, a run, I think. It's been sold off for so long. And now it's really punched above that 200-day moving average. That was at $65. This is now $70, 0.32. So we'll see. If it clears 72, it's going to go higher. That's the reason for a spike high. Bitcoin suffering a lot of weakness here. And I think as far as this is concerned, selling begets selling. Like I said, there's a lot of leverage associated with Bitcoin products and these Bitcoin treasury companies. And of course, if Saylor's company rolls over, Strategy, that'll be a big fracture in the market. So, yeah, it did hit. What's the low today? It did hit 80,946. It's now 82,000. But it is the recent low. It hasn't been this low since back in April 25. So close to a year ago. Anything else? Gold, some of that. Gold is down 4.55%. So it was down yesterday 1%, down 4.55%. Nothing like silver, which has been going crazy, silver, hasn't it? It's going absolutely berserk. It did hit, it spiked out high of $116,000 an ounce. Now it's down to 99. Last 2 days it's come down, but it's down 13% a day. It's hard to say whether this is a buying opportunity. It's hard to tell, isn't it? Or whether momentum's come out of this. But that is a bit of a big drop there, 13% in 1 day. So that will shake the markets as well. So a lot of people have made a lot of money on gold, silver stocks. So we'll see what happens. Anything else? That's enough, isn't it? Nat gas. What's happened to Nat gas? That was nuts. Nat gas went up to 7 on the 27th of January. It's all to do with America, of course, and the coal out there. And then it just dropped to 4, gapped down to 4. Anything else? Let's look at bonds. Nothing's happening in UK bonds. They're going sideways pretty much. A pound will buy you €1.15. It'll buy you $1.37. Okay, let's have a look at the microcap database. I'm going to select a few companies here. I'm not going to do too many because I've banged on too much. I love investing. It's about learning, isn't it? You always see anything as a learning. If you see anything, any hit you take and any win you make as a learning curve, learning about it, what's happening here, you will get better. But I think starting off, you have to get, portfolio management sorted first, because if you take a big hit in the wrong stock, it can almost wipe you out. And so I'm still learning every day. That's why I love it. I mean, it gets me up in the morning, make mistakes. But as Rocky said, it is no hard you punch. It's how hard you can take a punch and still go forward. That's where the learning is done. That's where the winning is done. Okay. Cab payments announced last night. I was looking at my clock. I thought, is that an RNS? It came out at 5:30. But they announced it yesterday. They've secured, what was it? An AGM license. So cab payments, a leading B2B FX and payments provider to fast growth and dynamic markets, today announces Middle Eastern subsidiary has secured a Category 2 Financial Services Permission and the Financial Services Regulatory Authority of the Abu Dhabi Global Market. Do you know what? The Middle East are doing business. It seems like everywhere else are stuck in either red tape or tariffs, but the Middle East are just getting ahead and doing it. They are, aren't they? Attracting a lot of people there, a lot of wealth. It's doing very well, so that's good exposure there for them. Separately, CAB is pleased to confirm it secured a significant new global clearing partnership. The group will announce its full year results on the 5th of March. Now, it's worth looking at these because they've recently announced ahead of expectations trading update. And they took a long time to come around, CAB. They, IPO'd and had a disaster. £3.20, I think, they IPO'd at. They're now only at 70 pence. But this did get as low as, let's look. CAB, where are you? It's up today on that. But it got as low as 36 pence. So it went from £3.20, which was when it IPO'd in, July 23, 3.20 there, and then got as low as, 36 pence, April 25. And then from there, it's gone sideways for a while, and then started breaking up above 200-day moving average, and then announced a 52-week high in the 15th of Jan. Always a good sign. And gapped up on that trading update. I think CAB has, a bit of a way to go here. Because if you look forward, they are recovering. So this year is only going to be 5% top-line growth. But profit dips by 8% to 13.1 million. Now, what are they? United Kingdom-based holding company for Crown Agents Bank. Engaged in business-to-business, cross-border payments, foreign exchange, all that stuff. At 70 pence a share, they're 177 million market cap. And so a PE there, even on 2025 results, of 12. Oh, sorry, 14. Now, they expect double-digit top-line growth for the next 2 years. So 15% top line for 2026, 15%, 16% top line growth for 2027. As far as profit is concerned, 74% net profit growth for 26, 35% net profit growth for 27. That would put them on a PE of 8, a PE of 6. If they achieve those numbers, that's too cheap. That is too cheap. And like I said, they've started off well because they've done ahead of expectations trading update. When was that? That was pre-close statement on the 15th of this month. So, you know, FX companies, always a bit tricky, but worth a look. CABP ticker. CABP ticker, okay? Check it out. What else is there? Bear with me, caller. Let's go just go for the... on my website here, on the MicroCap database, you can type your company name in up the top. Just below that is a load of companies with news out, all colour-coded according to the score rating used for the MicroCap League. So it's not just a colour code I put on and just say, oh, that should be green. It's based on fundamentals and technicals, okay? So you've got, green, amber, red. But there's a box next to the search box called AE, which stands for ahead of expectations. So when I go through all these trading updates and I see any company that's ahead of expectations on revenue, profit, whatever, then I click a box and it filters it into this. So if I click that on the MicroCap database, all I see are updates from companies that are ahead of expectations. So let's start off with this. Winking Studios. Wink, wink. Headquartered in Singapore, the group has 12 studios across Kuala Lumpur, Taipei. I don't know why I'm pronouncing this incorrectly. Kuala Lumpur, Taipei, Shanghai, Ningjing, Jiangsu, Tianjin, Dalian, providing end... I don't know why I have to say that in stupid names, words, accent, I don't know. But it just makes it a bit more exotic, doesn't it, you know? If I just said, Mark, they're based in 12 studios across Kuala Lumpur, Taipei, Shanghai... Even then, it's like a darts commentator. Shanghai, 180. Anyway, end-to-end art outsourcing and game development services for the global gaming industry. When did they list? Was it back in November, I think? Just check. WKS is ticker. WKS. Winking Studios. Obviously, I must have mispronounced that. That'd be a different kind of studio altogether, wouldn't it? If I mispronounce Winking Studios. I can't see much investor appetite for that, really, if you come out with that name. they're listed in the 14th of November. It's 2024. Really? That long ago? And they had a good start. They rocketed up from, 15 pence up to 27 pence by January 25, so a couple months later. And all of a sudden, they just came all the way back down, hitting a low of 10 pence in May 2025. So let's have a look. Let's have a little look at what they're talking about. So they've announced, overall, 13 pence a share, market cap 57 million, enterprise value 28 million. So got a bit of cash there. Let's scroll down. So they've announced a trading update for the full year. They expect to report a revenue increase of at least 40% as compared to financial year ended 31st December 2024 revenue of $31.9 million, which is marginally higher than current market expectations. The group's adjusted EBITDA is expected to be higher by a range of between 17-13% than the 2024's adjusted EBITDA of $4.8 million. So looking at it, 25, 26, expect to show double-digit top-line growth. That's 36% for 25, 17% for 2026, and 5% for 2027. Now, net profit, expect to show triple-digit growth of 357% for 25 to 1.75 million, then 63% for 2026, 2.8 million, and 15% for 2027 to 3.2. And... The forecast P for 25 is 33, but an EV earnings of 16 because they got cash. So it's a bit pricey there. But if you look out to 26, It's a PE of 20, EV earnings of 10. I think that's fine. And even better, if you look to 2027, a PE of 17, EV earnings of 9. So I think it's quite an interesting stock, maybe worth a watch. Of course, it's always a bit wary, companies based in the Far East, listing in the UK. You think, why would you do that? So it doesn't make a lot of sense. But so you've always got to be a bit wary of why that happens. What else is there? Luceco. LUCE's ticker, leading designer and manufacturer of residential and commercial electrification products and systems. The group designs and manufactures its market-leading range of wiring accessories, EV chargers, LED lighting, and portable power products at its state-of-the-art manufacturing facilities in Doncaster. No, it's not in Doncaster. Well, they didn't tell me where that was. They didn't state where they're based. Because if it's state-of-the-art, it's got to be somewhere. You know, if they say something like no offence to Doncaster, but it doesn't sound state-of-the-art place to be, does it? Luceco? I don't know how to pronounce that. L-U-C-E's ticker. 151 a share. They are a market cap of 227 million, but they've got a bit of debt there, so 295 enterprise value. So what do they announce here? Scrolling down. So, full year trading update. They say the full year performance to exceed previously upgraded expectations, 2025 revenue of 271 million, up 12%. Adjusted operating profit expect to be at least 33.5 million. That's 33.5 million, sorry. Representing an increase of approximately 15% over the prior and ahead of the top end of market expectations. Further progress in expanding adjusted operating profit margins, now expected to see 12%. So brokers upgraded the numbers. So double-digit top and bottom line growth is expected for 25, so 12% top line, and 31% net profit growth to 19.1 million. Puts on a PE of 12, EV earnings of 15. Seems okay. Could be a decent recovery play here. Especially if they start to reduce their net debt and achieve a bit more growth over the outer years. So worth noting, EV charging makes up 23% of their revenue. They will benefit from this growing market, of course. So that's Luceco, L-U-C-E. I'll just say the ticker in the future. Tribal Group, TRB, is a pioneering world leader of educational software and services. Its portfolio includes student information systems, a broad range of educational services covering quality assurance, peer review, benchmarking improvement, etc., etc. At 71 pence a share, 152 million market cap, 154 million enterprise value. In fact, that's going to come down now. I think they've got a net cash. So let's scroll down. So 25 full year trading update. The specs report, positive close, delivering revenue and adjusted EBITDA slightly ahead of recently upwardly revised market expectations. So that's even better. So they've been upgraded, and they're going to beat that revised upgrade. Importantly, Tribal closed FY25 with a substantially improved net cash position of 11.4 million, significantly ahead of market expectations. There we are. Net cash. They were in a net debt position of 3.2. So that's impressive. Brokers upgraded again. So top line growth is thin. So for 2025, 1% to 91 million. 2026, 2% to 93 million. But this is where the margin story and the efficiency drive is kicking in. Net profit's going to improve or grow by 48% to 8.1 million. Puts them on a PE of 19, EV earnings 19. For 2026, 21% growth to 9.8 million. They've got 16 PE. It seems to be going in the right direction, isn't it? So maybe worth watching TRB. Could get a lot better. I'm starting to bore myself now. I'll do two more. I'll do Personal Group. Well, it's just a cracking company. I've held this company for a while, and I can't see why it isn't valued more highly. Because it's they're going to be doing double-digit top line for the next 3 years, double-digit bottom line for the next 3 years. They've got 90% recurring revenue. They pay a dividend of about 5%. They've got a tumbler of cash on the balance sheet, 23 million. And they've just come out with revenue up 11%, adjusted EBITDA ahead of market expectations, new record insurance sales. In fact, there's an article I read a while back saying now that the most popular benefit now for employers is health insurance. And that's where these companies, that's where Personal Group, you know, exists in that area, and benefits and all that stuff, employee benefits and insurance. So, yeah, check it out. Like I said, the PE for 2025 is 17, but EV earnings are 14, so a truckload of cash. And then for 26, I mean, 25 is already done. But 26, a PE 14, but they got 13% top line growth to 54.4 million, 27% bottom line growth to 8 million. That's an EV earnings of 11. Then you go further out, like I said, 90% recurring revenue here. So it's, you know, very transparent, very visible earnings. 10% top line growth to 59.8 million. 10% bottom line growth, that's a PE of 10, EV earnings of, sorry, a PE of 12, EV earnings of 10. For double digit, 3 years of double digit bottom and top line growth with recurring revenue, a rock solid balance sheet, a big dividend, that's too cheap. It really is. I'm biased. I hold the company, of course. Maybe one worth looking at. This company's been a dog for a while. But I was surprised by the update, the Q4 update from S4 Capital. 27 pence a share. I may hold a bit of stock in this company. Maybe a little bit of a punt. I don't do punts, actually. I think you'd be punting just betting money and betting's odds against. But they are a tech-led, new-age, new-era digital advertising company established by Sir Martin Sorrell, who was one of the highest-paid FTSE 100 companies. He was the highest-paid of FTSE 100 chief execs. As a background, Sir Martin Sorrell founded WPP. This is his next vehicle, and he's taken it on at a really tough time. But WPP, he started as a shell. With a market cap of 1 million. It became the most valuable advertising company in the world, valued at 16 billion. That's phenomenal, isn't it? I mean, there was a lot of shares, for instance. There's not a case of going from 1 million and dividing, you know, 16 billion by 1 million. So, it, you know, the market cap got big on the way up. But nevertheless, it was still many, many, many multiples of where it was. So the problem with S4 Capital, I think he's trying to replicate what happened with WPP. But at the wrong time in the cycle. Yeah, advertising spend's been going down. Saying that, when he started and when he took over, it went from something like £1 a share up to £8.50 or something. I think it was £1.10 a share to £8.70. And then in 2021, of course, with the stock market crash, everything started getting softer and it went back down and it hit like, I think it was like 30 pence a share. Where did it get down to? S4. No, go down to 16 pence a share from £8.70 in 2021. And it got down to there in December of last year. But they came up with a train sim. I was really surprised, actually, because the worry here was they've acquired and merged with 30 businesses, 3-0, between 2018 and 2022. With that comes debt, and then with that comes, of course, a share overhang, because many of these companies were acquired on a 50-50 basis, so cash and shares issued in S4 Capital. So these companies have been offloading these shares, of course, when they can. They're locked in for a couple of years, and hence that's why the share price is taking a hammering. And of course, you've got the debt as well, and then you've got a softer end market. So three areas of concern here. A softer end market, people not advertising as much because they're worried. They also, a lot of their clients, the big tech companies, were spending a lot, you know, on CapEx, AI, data centers, all this stuff, and not on marketing, okay? That will change, of course, as these companies become now, they get their products out there and they're all vying to become market leaders. They'll be spending a lot of money, I think, advertising their AI services. So that will change, and S4 Capital will benefit from that. So as yet, they're not. Top-line growth is expected to be sort of flat for next year. But it's the debt that surprised me. So they brought debt down. First of all, they say, this is a trading update. 2020 full-year trading was ahead of revised guidance issued on the 24th of November, which, by the way, was a downgrade, but now they're going to do better than that, above the current consensus of net revenue of $664 million. So you realise this is a company now that is about $280 million. So I don't know what advertised tech companies are on, but if you do one-time sales and they're doing $664 million, there's a lot of upside here. And they also said net debt will be both significantly below current consensus. So by the way, current consensus for net revenue of $64 million and operational EBITDA of $75 million. By the way, they are cash flow positive. They're not loss-making. They reported a loss last year because of a write-down in the value of the business they acquired. So it's an accounting thing rather than a cash cost. And if you look at their cash flow, it's quite positive. But they're saying now EBITDA will be above $75 million. And net revenue will be above $664 million. Net debt will be both significantly below current consensus of $133 million and below the previously indicated range of $100 to $104. So the brokers are saying it'll be around $90 million net debt. So you got EBITDA now, and they are going to be on one point one times EBITDA, which is very manageable. I mean, the covenants are at 4.5, and even all the other advertising companies who've been highly acquisitive got debt way above this. So I'm thinking there could be some upside here. It's been, it's very risky. Do your own research. It's not investment advice. I do hold a few of these shares, so I'm a little bit biased. But it's one of those, it's in my high-risk reward category, so don't hold a lot. But I'm thinking, you know, from a purely sort of emotional side, does Sir Martin Sorrell, who's getting on a little bit now, want his last vehicle to be a failure? When his previous one, WPP, was one of the best performers ever, but then he was, I think, unceremoniously kicked out of that place. There was an investigation going on, I think. But, so I think we may have seen a bottom in S4 Capital. Don't hold me to that. It could still go wrong, as every investment can. But that was the first encouraging update I've seen from this company, based on the fundamentals of, you know, debt coming down, of course, that underpins everything. So maybe worth doing a bit of research on. May still plummet and go wrong, but maybe worth a little look. I say I'm biased, got to hold a couple of shares in it, not too much, but just to keep me interested on Martin Sorrell's story, because whatever you think of the guy, an amazing performer within his industry, you know, he's a titan in that industry. And I think, does he really want to, you know, sail into the sunset with a big failure? You know, as an anchor to that bolt, that boat he's in. Don't know what I'm talking about. But anyway, have a nice weekend. I hope you have a cracking one. Thank you for listening. Don't forget, sharepickers.com, if you want to join the membership club. It's around about £2.88 a week with 40% off, and you can get that right now at sharepickers.com. And that is less than half the price of I think, what's a bag of chips these days? A bag of chips. It's less than the price of a bag of chips. That's what it is. And you get all that information on the website. A huge amount of information. So check it out. Sharepickers.com. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciators.
The Share Pickers Podcast with Justin Waite. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.